If you are driving 75 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone and you get pulled over, you know whose fault that is. If you get a bill in the mail on the first day of the month and it says that it's due on the 15th day of the month and you pay that bill on the 20th day of the month, you know that you're going to have to pay an extra fee for that, and you know whose fault that is. If you drive in downtown Nashville and you are maybe not familiar with some of the streets that are one way or where you can park, you park in the wrong place and you come out and find a ticket on your windshield, you know whose fault that is. You can even look at some more serious things in life. You could look at someone that maybe is addicted to drugs. We know that drugs are so pervasive in our culture today. In rural areas, in Cheatham County, in places that are not in where big cities are found, we know that drugs are such a problem. And if you take someone that's addicted to drugs, and you approach that verse and say, why are you addicted to drugs? How did this start? The person knows the answer to that question. They know who's to blame in that situation. You can take someone who's an alcoholic. You take someone who's consumed with something like that. Consumed with monetary addiction. Talking about being addicted and craving money and the spending of money. Whatever the situation, you go back and you say, who is responsible? Who's to blame for this? They know the answer. They may not admit the answer. It may take a while for them to come to terms with that, but they deep down know who's to blame. They know whose fault that is. You've heard me mention a time or two about a friend of mine, a preacher whose son became using drugs and was kicked out of college and was very consumed with that type of life. And he said, I had friends of mine, the preacher, the father, said, I had friends of mine that came around and said, you know, your son started hanging out with the wrong crowd, and it's a shame that those people around him were so bad that influenced him to do these things. It's terrible that your son just got connected with these people that caused him to do this. And my friend, the father, he said, I looked at him, he said, you know, those other people are not the bad people here. And if we're going to talk about who the bad people here, it's my son. He had his eyes wide open when he did all these things. He knew exactly what he was doing. He knew that what he was doing was wrong. He knew the right thing to do, and he chose to do the wrong thing. He chose those friends. He chose to be around those people that may have been bad influences in his life. He let those people come into his life. He's the problem. My son is the problem. We know a lot of parents wouldn't say that, but he said, I just told him, he said, because that's the truth. He said, I wasn't trying to be mean. I know they were trying to be sympathetic. They were trying to help me to get through that pain and the struggle that I was having with my son, but he said this wasn't true, that it was everybody else's fault. It wasn't his. It was his fault. He did what he did. He knew what he was doing. They say when you go to medical school, when somebody's trained to be a doctor, and they have to take all the ethics classes on how you do what you do as a doctor, when you're supposed to act, and how you treat a patient, what you say to a patient, and all the types of laws that affect the way doctors do what they do. The first rule of medical ethics, the first thing that doctors are taught, and I'm sure nurses and others in the medical field are taught, the number one thing is do no harm. As a physician, the number one goal, the number one thing you're supposed to do is to do good. When you're presented with a patient that has a problem, you're supposed to do everything in your capacity to improve that patient's life, to help resolve their problem. If you're out, if they're anywhere, if a doctor sees anybody with a medical condition, somebody who's in a medical emergency, we know that they are obligated to act. As doctors, they have to do good when they see someone with a physical emergency, they have to do good. Wouldn't it be great if all people had that as their philosophy of life, as their number one principle? Is I'm not going to do harm to you, and I'm not going to do harm to myself. I'm not going to harm me. And if I harm me by the decisions I make with my eyes wide open, I'm not going to blame other people. I'm not going to try to deflect that responsibility. I'm not going to try to remove myself from accountability. I'm going to accept responsibility for what I did. Wouldn't it be great if everyone lived that way? This phrase, "do not harm yourself," is actually in the Bible. It was said by the Apostle Paul. You know the story in Acts chapter 16 when Paul and Silas are in a prison in Philippi. Paul and Silas were singing at midnight. The great lesson is the fact they were singing at midnight. It showed that circumstances were not going to affect their love of the Lord. They were arrested for doing what they do, and they were singing while they were in prison. Paul had joy in his life for being a Christian, whether he was in prison or whether he was free, no matter where he found himself. But we know the rest of the story. The earthquake happens, the bars, the doors of the jail come undone, and the prisoners start to escape, and the jailer, who's responsible for all of these prisoners, he knows deep down he didn't cause that to happen. It was the earthquake. He didn't let those prisoners go. But he knows he's going to be responsible for that, and so he decides he's going to kill himself. He's probably thinking, I might as well get it over with because they're going to kill me anyway. And said just as he was about to do that, just as he was about to kill himself. And verse 28 of Acts 16 says, "But Paul cried out with a loud voice, saying, do not harm yourself, for we are all here. And he called for lights and rushed in, and trembling with fear, he fell down before Paul and Silas. After he brought them out, he said, sirs, what must I do to be saved?" Paul said, the worst thing you could do right now is to kill yourself. Nobody left. We're all here. You're okay. And so then the jailer sees life much differently. He went from thinking, how am I going to kill myself? And the next question he asks is, what do I need to do to be saved? I'm going to think about saving myself now instead of killing myself. For a bit of our time this morning, I want us to think about ways in which people harm themselves. Instead of like the jailer saying, what must I do to be saved? What do I need to do to improve my life? What do I need to do to get closer to God? There are some people that are doing things that push them further away from God. And they harm themselves. So let's think this morning, in what ways do people harm themselves today and maybe not even realize it? The first one, and it's the most obvious one, the ways in which people harm themselves today is that they are simply living in sin. The first way and the most significant way people harm themselves, they live in sin. Yes, we are all sinners. Yes, we are all capable of sinning, whether we're a Christian or not. But we're talking about those who live in rebellion to God, those who know what they ought to do, but simply do not care, simply enjoy sinning, simply have no thought of what God thinks of that, have no thought of what the Bible teaches about it. It makes no difference to them. They're going to do what they want to do. That's the kind of person I'm thinking about today. That person harms themselves every day they're alive. Sin hurts them first and foremost, just like sin hurts all of us every time it's committed. What does sin do for the person that lives in it day in and day out? Well, it eventually will pollute their conscience. outside, they may look like they're enjoying life and doing what they want to do and everything's great, but I can assure you that there will come a time, either tomorrow or years from now, when that person will think back and say, you know, I've caused a lot of trouble. I've caused a lot of heartache for myself, usually for a lot of family, usually for a lot of friends. When I thought everything was fine, look what it did in all of these areas of my life. It pollutes their conscience. It produces guilt when they live in sin. A lot of things they have to remember about the lies they've told. And we know that ultimately living in sin forfeits one's eternal soul. Pollutes their conscience, creates guilt. And we know eventually that that person's soul has been forfeited. If somebody wants to live for Satan on the earth, they're going to live with Satan forever in hell. Some people look at that as unfair of God. Why would God, that loves all people, allow someone to be condemned and go to hell? Well, he's not doing that. They're doing that on their own. And it makes perfect sense that someone would live in rebellion to God, just like Satan wants them to, and then live forever with the devil in hell. That just makes sense. But so many people say, the person says, no, why would God do that? So many times when somebody asks that question, somebody thinks along those lines, God surely wouldn't condemn somebody. When they start asking those questions and saying those things, that's probably somebody that has a guilty conscience. Really, the deep down thing that they're saying is, I hope God will not allow me to go to hell. That's really what they're saying. They're thinking of their own life. They're thinking of all things about them. They're thinking, hopefully, God will not let that happen. That's the way someone thinks if they live their life in sin. One day they start thinking about God. One day they start thinking about when they leave this earth. And they start hoping God will not do what he said he's going to do. We can't think about God and what God's going to do based on our hopes and wishes and maybes and what ifs and all those types of things, all the hypotheticals. We have to go by what he said is going to happen. We have to go by what he said is going to happen, not what you think he might do and what you hope he does in your life. We have to go by what he said. How do people harm themselves? The first and number one way that is over everything else is that they're living in sin. Those who live in sin harm themselves. But there's also another category. It's like it, but a little bit different. Another category of people that harm themselves are those who simply refuse to obey the gospel. And those are people we would say are good people, quote unquote good people. Now I know the word good is sort of a relative term. Somebody says, well, what makes a good person a good person? You say, well, that standard sort of fluctuates depending on who you're talking to. But you know what I mean by that. I'm talking about the person that doesn't commit crimes and they try to live for the Lord. And they may even attend worship services and Bible studies, but they never obey the gospel. They're hurting themselves. They're harming themselves. And that's the person who probably doesn't even know it, how much they're hurting themselves. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, Paul talked about the second coming of Jesus, which is mainly the theme of 1 and 2 Thessalonians. If you read those two books, there's a lot about the second coming of Jesus. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, he talks about the Lord. He's going to come back with his angels, flaming fire, dealing out retribution to two groups of people. Paul said as plain as he can say it. He said, dealing out retribution to those who do not know God, and to those, he makes two different categories, and to those who do not obey the gospel. Very interesting distinction that Paul makes there. There are really two groups of people around the world that are lost, two types of lost people. You're lost if you've never known God. You're lost. I mean, isn't that the point of evangelism, is that you go out and teach people who do not know God about God? If they're saved, then why are we teaching them? The Bible makes it clear they're lost. That's one type of lost person. Another type of lost person is the person we're talking about now, the person that's a good person, that they do a lot of good things, but they've never obeyed the gospel in the way that the Bible teaches. They're lost too. They're lost as much as the other person who never knew God in the first place. The person who doesn't obey the gospel is like the person that's drowning, and you throw out the lifeline, you throw out the life preserver, and they refuse it. Nobody's going to do that if they're drowning. Nobody's going to be, wake up in the middle of the night, smell smoke in the house, and the next door neighbor comes running by and says, "Your house is on fire." And the person says, "No, I'm so saved." No, they run out of the house. Somebody refusing to obey the gospel is somebody that says, "No, I got it. I'm fine. I don't need to do anything. I'm pretty confident that I've been good enough. I'm going to rest on my own morality and say that baptism thing, that's for other people. Confessing Christ, that's for other people, but that's really not for me. I'm going to do things my way." They're just harming themselves. People who live in sin harm themselves. People who don't obey the gospel harm themselves. There's a third group of people that are doing a lot of harm to themselves, and those are the people, for lack of a better way to say it, who are playing Christianity. Who are playing Christianity. Here's a question I want you to think about this morning, and you're the only one that can answer it. I can't answer it for you. Is your faith a matter of conviction, or is your faith a matter of convenience? Is your faith a matter of conviction or convenience? You can ask yourself that question every day. Because I think in the life of anybody, sometimes that answer may change. Our lives change. We live in different places, get married, have children. All life is constantly changing. The challenges we face, the temptations we face every day change. The world creates new ways for you to leave God, don't they? Every day gives you a new way to leave God. World puts in front of you. So when you ask the question, is my faith a matter of conviction or convenience? On the given day, that answer may change. We hope that it's always a matter of conviction. But some days it may just be a matter of, "Yeah, I'm a Christian, but I'm not going to act like it today." Because today's the day I'm going to go through the motions. I'm going to say the right thing, but today's the day that I'm going to go over here and do this thing, be with these people, say this, do this. That's convenient. It's convenient for my life right now. Is your faith a matter of conviction? A matter of convenience? There's a lot of passages of Scripture that says your faith has to be a matter of conviction. Romans chapter 12, verse 1 says we should be living sacrifices. Present your bodies as living sacrifices. Kind of a contradiction in terms, isn't it? Sacrifice means you kill something or end something. You give it away. How can you live and be a sacrifice? Well, we know what it means, even though it sounds like a contradiction. Every day we sacrifice. As we live, we make sacrifices for the Lord. That takes conviction to be a living sacrifice. How about 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58? Always abound in the work of the Lord. Always, every day, it's a conviction, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Not just on a certain day, not just a few days a year, not just when it's convenient, but always abounding in the work of the Lord. How about Titus chapter 2, verse 14, that Paul said we should be zealous for good works. See all those adjectives? All those adverbs? Be a living sacrifice, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Be zealous for good works. The Bible pushes us in the direction of conviction, not convenience. So some people harm themselves when they play Christianity. When they just use it, manipulate it, fit it in when it's convenient. That person is simply just lying to themselves about their faith. When you look at Hebrews chapter 11 and all those people from the Old Testament, by faith so-and-so, by faith this person, verse after verse after verse, those were all people who lived by conviction. That's why they're listed there. Here's how many people lived out their faith. By conviction. It took conviction for Moses, it says, to deny his livelihood with the Egyptians and go live with his people. That was a sacrifice. That was conviction. Abraham willingly going to offer his son Isaac. That wasn't convenient at all. That was a matter of conviction. Look at Rahab, the harlot who's presented with the spies, and she hides them and she tells them, I'm going to be with your people. I have a conviction. It was very inconvenient for her to join herself with the Israelites. It was not easy. It took sacrifice. But she said, I'm going to do that. That's where I'm convicted. All those people are listed there in Hebrews chapter 11. If there was a modern Hebrews chapter 11, and I'm asking this not out of any sense of pride that you may have. It's not a question of pride. But if there was a modern Hebrews chapter 11, could there be things that you've done where you could be listed on a list of people who did things by conviction for the Lord? A 21st century Hebrews chapter 11. By faith, put your name there. What would it say after that? What would be listed? What would come from your life? And we could say, I remember when they did that for the Lord. It wasn't convenient. It wasn't easy. But it was sacrificial. It was a matter of conviction. So the Philippian jailer was not the last person to harm himself. To want to harm himself. People who live in sin harm themselves. People who do not obey the gospel harm themselves. The people who play Christianity harm themselves. I was watching a television show once. It was one of these crime shows, police shows, where they're investigating who committed the murder. And they're at the police station and they're getting some background on a suspect, and they run it through the system and try to find out more about it. And this one detective says, you know, I don't think this is our guy. I don't think he did it. Another cop thought he said, no, I think this is our guy. I think he was the one. The first guy said, well, we ran through the system. He's not done anything. He said he didn't have a speeding ticket. He hasn't stolen anything, broke into a house. No drugs. There's nothing there. And the other detective who thought this was the right guy, he said, look down at the prison. Everybody in prison at one point in their life didn't have a record either. He said, they didn't have a record until they did something. And he said, I think this guy did something. I think this is the first thing. So they all had the first thing. And I think that's true, I know that's true, of all of us. Every day we're presented with things, and even if we've never done these things before, even if, though maybe we have said, oh, I will never do that, that going down that road is not interesting to me. Every day, we're given the option to do that. And even if we have supposedly, quote, a clean record, we can still make the wrong decision. And it'll be the first time. So every day, we have to say, am I going to harm myself today by sinning? Or am I going to live for the Lord? Am I going to choose the narrow way that leads to life? If you're living in sin, we encourage you to obey the gospel today. If you're playing Christianity, if you're just using Christianity, we encourage you to respond today. Many ways in which you can harm yourself today, but a good thing that you can do is to respond and say, I'm not going to do those things anymore. I'm not going to keep harming myself. I'm going to obey the gospel, be baptized in Christ, or I'm going to renew my faith today, renew my conviction, start living for the Lord the way that the Bible teaches. If you're in either situation this morning, we encourage you to come while we stand and sing together.
All things are ready. Come to the